is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, my goodness. The bashing of the Senate Republicans, or at least the 47 Senate Republicans, who chose to write a rather juvenile letter to the leaders of a foreign country, a letter which was immediately ridiculed by both the foreign country and by the administration. The voices speaking back about this are picking up. Here, for example, is Dick Cheney.
Congress moving in and usurping presidential power and authority, and I think what we've seen over the last 15 years is the development of that theme of a more assertive Congress that no longer honors the traditions that are laid out in our report in terms of the practices of the president's preeminence in foreign policy. And as Henry Hyde said very well in his opening statement, it continues today. What Jim Wright did as Speaker last week to insert himself into direct negotiations with the communist regime in Managua, in my opinion, is fundamentally wrong. It's something that should never have happened. I don't think George Shultz should have let him off the hook yesterday.
Yeah, George Shultz, the secretary, or excuse me, the attorney general, should have prosecuted the SOB, right? Actually, was he the attorney general? He was the secretary of state. Yeah, George Shultz, secretary of state, should be going after this guy. Now, that was, of course, when the presidential prerogative of Ronald Reagan to sell weapons to the Iranians in exchange for their having held the U.S. hostages in 1980 was being questioned by Democrats. Oh, my God, Democrats are questioning what Reagan is doing? And then he's taking that money. And by the way, we passed this Boland Amendment, which says that federal money cannot be used to give to the right-wing death squads down in Central America, in Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador. But Reagan did it anyway. He took the money that he got from Iran from selling them the weapons via Israel. The Israelis delivered them. He took the money that he got from Iran from selling them weapons in exchange for them holding the hostages until Reagan was sworn in, and used that money to buy weapons here in the United States that they shipped out of Central America. Then they sold those weapons to the Contras in exchange for cocaine, which they shipped back to the United States, turned it into crack, sold it in the inner cities. And didn't Reagan have a fine old time? He was able to double the number of black people in prison. Actually, I don't know if that was the outcome of it. But, you know, this is the direction we've gone in. Before the Reagan administration, the United States' level of imprisonment of people was not that different than most other developed countries in the world. Now we are, you know, four or five times higher than pretty much anybody else on Earth. We have 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisoners. So that was Dick Cheney. Here's Henry Hyde. Henry Hyde, who was, you know, famous Republican congressman from Illinois. He's the guy who authored the Hyde Amendment, which makes it illegal for federal money to be used for abortions. There's a whole brand new version of that, by the way, been attached to a piece of legislation over the last day or so that Harry Reid's getting quite upset about. Republicans attached this anti-abortion thing to this piece of legislation without telling anybody. But anyhow, here's Henry Hyde.
We have seen this week illustrated the tragic consequences of congressional supremacy intervening into the president's proper and constitutional domain in the area of foreign policy. We've seen the Speaker of the House permitting himself to be used, to put the kindest explanation on it, to play one branch of the government off against the other in a very sensitive foreign policy issue.
Yeah, indeed. And then it just goes on and on. A couple of things I'm curious about. If your member of Congress was Tom Cotton, if you're from Arkansas, and you called his office and asked them, how much money did he make on Tuesday when he spoke to that group of war industry lobbyists. How much money did he make from that after on Monday he wrote that letter that would help lead us to a war? Just wondering. Just curious. And have you had an opportunity to call your other Republican members of Congress and say, hey, did you sign that? Were you one of those traitors? Right. The Detroit Free Press, day before yesterday, March 9th, 2015. This is the official editorial. This is not a letter that was written by some buddy of Bill Ayers who had moved over from Chicago to Detroit to just move around the Midwest. No, this is the Detroit Free Press, a generally conservative newspaper, by the way. This is their editorial from day before yesterday. America looks weakest when its internal arguments spill over into its internal international diplomacy, something that has been rare in our nation's history, which is very true. That is happening now is a blot on the 114th U.S. Senate, specifically on the 47 Republican senators who signed an open letter to the Islamic Republic of Iran. A missive whose sole purpose is to end President Barack Obama's ongoing nuclear negotiations with that country. They say it's unlikely that, as some have suggested, this letter rises to the level of treason or violates the Logan Act, which bars unauthorized citizens from negotiating with foreign powers, but it certainly betrays a deep misunderstanding of our government structure and a profound and dismaying disrespect for the office of the presidency as well as its incumbent occupant. Well, of course, that's what Republicans do. You know, disrespect the president, disrespect the United States of America, of course. And, you know, betrays a deep misunderstanding of our governmental structure. Yeah. I mean, Tom Cotton is a freshman senator. He's brand new at the job. He's been there for 2 months. He doesn't know what he's doing. But, you know, many of the other 46 senators who signed that letter, you know, like John McCain, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, Rand Paul's new. No, actually, he just got reelected, didn't he? So he's been around for a while. Marco Rubio's been around for a while. The Detroit Free Press goes on to say, to disagree with a sitting president is one thing, even if that disagreement is loud, even if it's raucous. A deliberate attempt to undermine a sitting president's efforts to discharge his constitutional obligations, that is something else entirely. They summarize by saying the Republicans who dispatched this letter have done more than embarrass a president they dislike. They have also disgraced themselves and undermined the credibility of the nation whose constitution they took an oath to uphold. Oh, by the way, this is so funny. Rural Lib pointed this out over at DU yesterday. 47 senators out of 100 in the Senate, that's 47%. 47% of the Senate voted or wrote, you know, signed a letter to try to hurt the United States. What's with this 47% thing that the Republicans have, right? I mean, Mitt Romney, 47% of the people don't pay taxes, they're just freeloaders. Now it's 47% of the senators don't want to legislate, they're just freeloaders. I mean, is this like a magic number for them? Does this have something to do with numerology or astrology? Does this have something to do with why they flip the stars upside down on the flag, that they keep going to 47s?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
But the bigger question, now that these Republicans are saying things like, oh, it was just a joke, the president has no sense of humor. No, I'm serious. I'm not making this up. What should be done about this? Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. And Charles in Conway, South Carolina, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Charles, what's up?
I would like to know why, if the Republicans are so gung-ho about war, why don't they reinstitute the draft?
Oh, that's a good question. I can tell you the answer, Charles, because when you have a draft, you're less likely to have a war.
Correct.
So that's why they don't want to have a draft.
And if they reinstitute the draft, make sure, like the Israelis, everyone has to go.
Yeah, male or female. Charlie Rangel and I have had this conversation on this program at least once a year for at least a decade now. And Charlie Rangel fought in the Korean War. In fact, I believe he was wounded in the Korean War. And he is, you know, just solid that if you're going to have a war, then everybody in the country needs to be willing to, or, you know, be in a position where they or a member of their family could put not just some skin in the game, but some blood in the game. Because war is really, really serious business. And you can't have a war just based on having poor people desperate for a job or desperate for an opportunity to go to college, you know, being willing to sign up and have themselves shot at for a sixpence, to quote Thomas Jefferson. So I'm with you, Charles. Great suggestion. Thank you for the call. Andrea in Palm Springs, California. Hey, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Yes, following the logic of the senator's letter to Iran, why should any country ever want to engage in negotiations with us if their claim is true?
Well, and that's the big problem, because if what they have said is true, what they have then also said to the world, and this is what everybody keeps pointing out, is you can't trust the United States on anything. And what they're really saying is you can't trust the Republican Party on anything. You can't trust the Republican Party to do what's in the best interest of the American people. You can't trust the Republican Party to do what's in the best interest of world peace. You can't trust the Republican Party to do what's in the best interest of surviving, you know, the planet surviving through global warming. You can't trust the Republican Party to do what's in the interest of the people of the United States with regard to everything from health care to long-term unemployment benefits to the economy. All you can trust the Republican Party to do, and they will do it at every opportunity, and they have ever since the 1870s or so when they got taken over by the conservatives, you can trust the Republican Party to behave in a way that will accrue the greatest amount of money, power, and benefit to wealthy individuals in this country, particularly white wealthy individuals, although they'll take a minority here and there if they can get them, and then they'll give them a lot of publicity. But they're basically all about the power structure and all about the wealth and all about the transnational corporations. And then, you know, like the old saying, there's only two kinds of people in the Republican Party, millionaires and suckers. And, you know, the millionaires will then figure out ways to bring the suckers along with issues like abortion and guns and gays and God and all that kind of stuff.
Yes. So, yes. I think it's beyond shameful.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is so beyond shameful that it is un-American. There's just no other way to describe it than that. Andrea, thank you for the call, and thank you for watching Free Speech TV in Palm Springs. Much appreciated. This is astonishing. I mean, everybody has been looking. By now, we would have seen examples of any time in history, literally in history. Did the Whigs reach out and talk to foreign governments about, you know, what Jefferson was up to, or Monroe, or no, it just has never happened before. We'll be back. What about Tom Harbin here with you? Yes, 47%. Whenever anything goes really wrong for the Republicans, look for that number, right? Because it's always when they're actually revealing who they are. Like, you know, the Republicans don't want to give anything to Iran unless Iran, like, you know, helps them steal an election, like in 1980. It's really pretty amazing. I asked this a couple of days ago. I want to bring this back and ask it again. I'm just really curious. Those of you, this is just, you know, I'm curious your opinion. Conventional wisdom is that Hillary Clinton has the Democratic Party nomination locked up. You know, the big question is who's going to be her running mate. Martin O'Malley, the former mayor of Baltimore and the former governor of Maryland, who's a reasonably good progressive, is saying, hey, wait a minute. You know, this thing ain't over until it's over. And he's seriously behaving like he might be a candidate. And he's just come right out. In fact, he's making Dodd-Frank one of his, Dodd-Frank and Glass-Steagall, you know, bring back Glass-Steagall. He's doing a version of Elizabeth Warren. And I'm just curious, if you're a Democrat and you're inclined to vote for a Democrat for president, what do you think about Martin O'Malley? Now, everybody knows my first choice would be Bernie Sanders. My second choice would be Elizabeth Warren. But, you know, that said, there are other candidates as well. And I'm just curious, you know, if you have some thoughts on Martin O'Malley. Trevor Tim wrote a great piece over The Guardian about Hillary Clinton's emails. And he says, you know, Republicans, if you're all hysterical about Hillary Clinton's emails, then pass the legislation that has been put before you three times now over the last few years to reform the Freedom of Information Act process to make it easier for Americans, including right-wing cranks who hate Hillary Clinton, to get public documents. Make the government more transparent and enforce that transparency on employees, of, you know, federal employees, like Hillary Clinton was. It's real simple. So, but, you know, the reality, as Trevor Tim pointed out, is that, well, here it is. The National Security Council used to accept and process FOIA requests and then suddenly decided to stop in the 1990s. When the Bush administration mysteriously disappeared millions of White House emails during the attorney firing scandal in 2006, the Justice Department convinced a court to exempt the Office of Administration as well. And then, you know, they go off on, you know, how this is, you know, both administrations, the Bush and the Obama administration, have been less than transparent with regard to FOIA. So let's pass FOIA reform. And there have been a couple of attempts. Finally, I wanted to share with you this. Actually, finally, I got a bunch of stuff. By the way, I don't remember if this was somebody in the chat room or if somebody sent me an email or if I just serendipitously and coincidentally read something on the internet. Given the level of coincidence here, I'm guessing that it probably wasn't a coincidence that somebody actually knew this was coming and told me about this. But about 2 weeks ago, maybe a week and a half ago, for whatever reason, I got something, an email, a message, somebody posted it in the chat room, something, I'm not sure what, that said, you ought to read the book The Time Cellar by Mark Emery. Cellar as in wine cellar. And it's this amazing story about this guy who basically pops open a time portal and gets to talk to Thomas Jefferson and share some wine with him. And I couldn't put it down. I started. It's available as a Kindle book, you know. And I bought it and I read it on my phone. It took, you know, before I go to sleep every night, I read, and it took me two. I read for a half hour, an hour or so, and then fall asleep. And so anyhow, I'm reading this book, and it's a great book. It's a delightful book. And I get to the end, and I'm reading the acknowledgments, which I normally don't do. You know, I mean, normally you finish a book, you just finish the book. But I was still a little wound up, and I thought, okay, I'll read the acknowledgments here, and it'll bore me enough that I can, when I turn off the phone, I'll fall asleep. And there in the acknowledgments was, and thanks to Tom Hartman, whose book, What Would Jefferson Do?, gave me some insights into Jefferson's perspective on slavery and the times. I'm like, what? Wasn't that sweet? So anyhow, if you're looking for a nice novel, good dumb read, and I don't mean dumb in a bad sense. I mean, this is not Moby Dick. It's not, you know, 800 words of dense but brilliant literary prose. This is, you know, it's a short fiction novel that's just a fun read. The Time Cellar by Mark Emery. So anyway, the thing that I wanted to get to, and I'm going to pick up your calls right after the break here, and we'll get into this. What should we do about these Republicans? The other thing that I want to get to is some astonishing results from some surveys done by the Progressive Change Institute. And I want to share these statistics with you. And also, there's amazing information. We're going to get into the next hour about how corporations are ripping us off in ways you never even imagined.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
I mean, truly astonishing techniques that corporations are using to rip us off, like having thousands of subsidiaries. How do they do that? Very jubilantly ugly, the good. The Wikimedia Foundation, parent company of online encyclopedia Wikipedia, was one of the handful of web companies that announced Tuesday that they were suing the NSA over its surveillance programs. The lawsuit accuses the NSA of violating the constitutional rights of web users. It also accuses the agency of going above and beyond its congressionally mandated authority. In a statement to the press, Wikimedia executive director Lila Tretikov said, By tapping the backbone of the Internet, the NSA is straining the backbone of democracy. By violating our users' privacy, the NSA is threatening the intellectual freedom that is central to people's ability to create and understand knowledge. I couldn't agree more. Keep up a good fight, Wikimedia. The bad. Pat Robertson. Yep, him again. During a recent episode of the 700 Club, a viewer named Tina asked Pat what she should do about the fact that most of her co-workers were practicing Buddhists. Here was his response.
If you put yourself in the middle of a hospital ward where everybody has that disease except you, sooner or later you will be infected by it. Now, there's one thing for you to be ministering to somebody who's of a different persuasion. But if you're in the middle of hundreds and hundreds of people who believe that way, you've got an uphill fight. And I think your best thing at that point is to withdraw with dignity. Get out of that environment because they're going to get to you before you get to them.
Right. Never change, Pat Robertson. Never change. And the very, very ugly Ben Stein. During a Monday appearance on Fox, so-called news is outnumbered. The former Nixon speechwriter and Michelle Obama's school lunch initiative, he said that her lunch initiative was Orwellian. Check it out.
The whole thing is George Orwell. I mean, in 1984, the party, the English Socialist Party, which was a dictatorial party of Big Brother, controlled everything in people's lives, including what they ate. And would not. And any, if you didn't like what Big Brother told you to eat, you were a thought criminal and could be prosecuted.
Is it true? Was it the English Socialist Party in 1984 that was the bad guy? I mean, I read the book. I don't remember that. But then, of course, it's Ben Stein. Anyhow, that's very, very ugly. Oh, man. Tehran Tom. That's what they're calling Tom Cotton now. Tehran Tom. Amazing. Jared Polis. Tehran Tom asks Iranian Revolutionary Guards for help in battle against U.S. diplomats. Tehran Tom took his case directly to the Iranian government. 47 Republican senators have aligned themselves with Iran's hard right hardliners. Who would have thought? Right? I mean, it's just like it's amazing. It's mysterious. Shane has found all the numerology stuff about the number 47. It is a prime number. And it makes people not like you, apparently. Oh, and Wisconsin, you know, Scott Walker signed the Right to Work for Less legislation yesterday. So now, you know, within a decade, workers in Wisconsin will also make $5,600 less than workers in union security states. Because Wisconsin is now a Right to Work for Less state. The first casualty happened. A company called Hoffman Construction said, screw this. We're out of here. They're moving from Wisconsin to Minnesota. Minnesota, of course, run by Mark Pryor, by a good Democratic governor, a Democratic legislature. Mark Dayton. Thank you, Jim. And, you know, Minnesota doing just fine. Thank you very much. They're glad to take, you know, disgruntled companies from Wisconsin. Lawrence in Lawrenceville, Georgia. Hey, Lawrence, what's on your mind?
Tom, I guess I'm a little bit amazed that you guys are so surprised at what's occurring with Iran. I mean, after listening to Netanyahu, I can't even imagine us not taking heed to what this guy is saying about his country and the protection.
Netanyahu said nothing, Lawrence. He knew no specifics of the deal. He didn't lay out any specifics of the deal.
It does matter, Lawrence.
You don't go in and trash the President of the United States in the middle of a negotiation. You don't do that.
Tom, at the end of the day, if it's down to protecting your country, you're telling me I should rely on Barack Obama?
You're telling me I should depend on Netanyahu to protect the United States of America?
Yes, to protect the United States of America. He's not talking about protecting the – what are you talking about? Protecting the United States of America. He's talking about the literally livelihood of his country.
Well, that's his problem in Israel. Let Netanyahu give a speech in Israel about that. He doesn't have to come here to talk about his opinion about his country. I realize since 1991, he's been saying Iran is only a year or two or three or whatever away from a bomb. I get it. Netanyahu has lied over and over and over again to his own people. He has lied over and over again to us. And I'm over it, Lawrence. John in Redding, California. Hey, John, what's up?
I would just like for you to expound on the fact that how Congress did not violate the Logan Act by participating in this last little scenario they had. I don't understand how they didn't violate the Logan Act.
I think the Logan Act says that any individual who first of all, the Logan Act was passed in 1799 during the John Adams administration, the next to the last year of John Adams' presidency, and you know, John Adams had a bunch of political enemies, and the Logan Act, I think, was an attempt to take one of them out. It was only used once in 1803, if my history is correct. It hasn't been used since then. If it was used, I'm guessing that whoever used it would argue that, whoever violated it, was being prosecuted, would probably take it to the Supreme Court and say it was an inappropriate or unconstitutional violation of the First Amendment. And the Logan Act essentially says that you may not negotiate with a foreign government if you are not an authorized person. I'm of the opinion, and I realize there are people who disagree with me, and they're much more, you know, throw the bums in jail about this. And I'm willing to be convinced, but I haven't seen anything that's convincing, that a member of Congress actually does have the authority, does have the right, the legal right, to correspond with a foreign government. They are involved in foreign policy. Now, that said, I mean, just because you can do something doesn't mean you should, you know? I mean, it's like I can walk down the street and make smart-ass remarks at people. I can, you know? But, hey, if somebody punches me out, whose fault is that?
But, Tom, let me ask you. I don't mean to cut you, but let me ask you. But it specifically states that you don't have the right to interfere.
Right.
It's not only that they're conversing. There's an interference because they're trying to undermine.
I understand.
So I don't understand how the Logan Act doesn't apply to Congress. I don't understand. So as an individual,
John, it may be that the Logan Act does apply, but the salient factor of it is whether the person is authorized to negotiate with foreign governments, and I could be wrong, but I personally believe that anybody who's elected to Congress, to the federal Congress, is authorized to do so. I mean, for example, Jim McDermott and two other Democrats went to Iraq toward the end of 2002 to basically try to highlight for the American people the fact that Saddam Hussein had no weapons of mass destruction and George W. Bush was lying to us. The Republicans went hysterical. I mean, I've got an article that's in the Weekly Standard around here someplace, you know, just going nuts on this stuff. But, you know, they weren't yelling Logan Act. They were just saying, don't, you know, you're trying to harm George W. Bush. He's the president. You know, that's not something that you should be doing. Thank you, Daniel. So now this is, and in 1975, this is interesting. This is from the Wikipedia on the Logan Act. In 1975, Senators John Sparkman and George McGovern were accused of violating the Logan Act when they traveled to Cuba. The State Department concluded, and I quote, the clear intent of the Logan Act is to prohibit unauthorized persons from intervening in disputes between the states and foreign governments. Nothing in the Logan Act, however, would restrict members of Congress from engaging in discussions with foreign officials in pursuance of their legislative duties under the Constitution. So you know, there you go, John. I just don't think that you're going to see a successful prosecution. I think that these guys need to be prosecuted in the court of public opinion, and they need to be impeached in the ballot box. But, you know, it's we'll see. And I'm really interested to hear from people who tried to call their members of Congress. Thank you, John, for the call, who called their members of Congress to say, you know, did you really sign that traitor letter? Jennifer in Elk Grove, California. Hey, Jennifer.
Good morning. Before I get to my comment, my answer to Lawrence is yes, you're supposed to trust your commander-in-chief in foreign relations. He's done nothing to not have your trust. I trusted the Bush administration until I found out that they were deceiving us,
right,
and I didn't trust them anymore. Here's why I'm calling, though, and I don't know if you know the answer to this. There's this letter with 47 Republicans that signed on to it.
Right.
Were the Democrats shown this letter in advance and invited to sign it as well? Or were they excluded from it?
To the best of my knowledge,
know that.
To the best of my knowledge, it was not even shown to Democrats. And the thing that causes me to think that is that if it were shown to Democrats, one of them would have leaked it before it got published.
That's what I think.
You know, there would have just been a
how partisan it is.
Yeah. That's my point. That's the point I've been going off on for 2 days here. This has very little to do with foreign policy, and it has everything to do with domestic politics. It has everything to do with destroying the president of the United States, making sure that he has no legacy whatsoever. I mean, the legacy that he has right now principally is Obamacare, and they're trying to destroy that as well. They want to just basically roll back the clock so that, you know, a decade from now, it'll seem like Barack Obama was never president. Jennifer, thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archive.
Which raises the question once again, what do we do with these people? Well, I think that we need to hold them up for, at the very least, ridicule in the court of public. 15 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Mark in Orlando, Florida. Hey, Mark, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Tom. Yeah, thanks for all the good conversations. I did call Rubio yesterday and said, hey, do you realize your board? They answered yes to he did sign the letter, and that I asked them, did they realize it's bordering on sedition? And then they asked for my information, and I cut the call short.
Yeah.
I was an Orlando occupier, and I just got paranoid.
Yeah.
Anyways, another thing. Patrick Murphy, a member of Congress, right?
Mm-hmm.
He used the Selma March in an email to promote his campaign and to try to get funding yesterday, sent it. And if you check into Patrick Murphy, his last three votes with Republicans, yes for Keystone, yes to cut Dodd-Frank regulations, and yes to shut down the government. And then here's the guy using Selma March to secret, you know, like I thought how, you know, it just irked me. And I just wanted to say stuff. I know people from Florida listen. Hey, if you got that same email, hey, let them know. I called yesterday. So anyways.
There you go. Okay. Thank you very much, Mark. Good to hear from you. James in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, James.
Yeah, hi. I called my Senate, federal Senator Pat
mm-hmm.
Toomey.
Mm-hmm.
And I also called a lot of other senators saying that I think that they should be pushing. I believe that this is treason. I know we go, but to do what they did to go behind the president's back, it's a little bit more than going pointing out a mistake that someone made. This is 47 United States senators signing a letter telling a foreign government behind the back, and I don't know. I went as far as to call the FBI to say I would file charges if they would arrest them, but that didn't get me anywhere.
Yeah, that's probably not going to happen.
I know it ain't. But I take this very seriously. I'm concerned that we're at a crossroads of where these people are really going to destroy this country and just about dismantle us and have us just like Hitler did all over the world fighting wars and you've seen what happened to Germany after that was done.
Yeah. Probably a better analogy is what England did for 100 years. You know, it's the imperial power thing, because I don't think that drawing parallels between us and Hitler's Germany are you know, useful.
Yeah, I know what you mean. A lot of people don't like that, but
Well, and there's no way that Obama is Hitler, and there's no way that we're Germany in 1940. I mean, it's just,
I'm not calling Obama. No. I just think that what these Republicans did, I believe it's treason.
Yeah.
You don't?
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think, you know, if not to the very finest letter of the law, if it's not legally treason, it is morally treason. It is fundamentally un-American. This is right up there with yelling "you lie" at the President of the United States during a State of the Union address. This is right up there with the, you know, throwing 90,000 African Americans off the voter rolls 3 weeks before the election in Florida in 2000. I mean, this is right up there. Thank you, James. It's right up there with Richard Nixon telling Anna Chenault to tell the South Vietnamese to don't take that deal that Lyndon Johnson's offering. I'll give you a better deal and I'll make you rich. This is right up there with Ronald Reagan's campaign, Bill Casey, negotiating with the Iranians to hold the hostages so he could beat Jimmy Carter. 10 minutes before the hour, welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Donald in Oak Park, Illinois. Hey, Donald, what's on your mind?
Yes, hi, Tom. You know, I think that the Democratic politicians better start screaming about this because right now you look at the television, it's all about Hillary and the emails.
Right.
They should start bringing this forward because in a couple of weeks this is all going to die down and all forgotten, and yet the Republicans are going to get away with something else again. It seems like they get away with it because we don't make a big stink, and we should call it treason. We should. Even if it isn't treason, we should start screaming treason, because if the shoe was on the other foot, I know what they would be doing. We're too easygoing and we're too willing to be Mr. Nice Guy and be very diplomatic.
Yeah.
No more diplomacy. You start going after him. Now, this Cotton guy, what really kills me.
Tehran Tom.
Is it? Yes. They made a mention that he's a combat veteran.
Right.
And all of a sudden, his word is gospel. And that's the way I'm taking it now. Now, I'm a veteran, too. And what really pisses me off about this whole thing, about because he's a veteran, all of a sudden he could say whatever he wants, and it should be held as a credible. It's
right.
not.
Right.
As soon as you take off that uniform and you put on a suit and hold an office in our government, you better damn well be working for the American people and nobody else.
Yep. I'm with you, Donald.
Gains within the party.
Yeah. I think, you know, this deification of American soldiers is part of our national guilt complex, I think, frankly, around there not being a draft and our having a military where we send thousands of young men and women to their death and tens of thousands to be maimed and injured for the rest of their lives simply because they're poor. And, you go back and you read Jefferson and he says, I hope I shall never live in a country where the young men of our country are willing to sell themselves to be shot at for a sixpence. He said, we have no pauper military here, and we are proud of that. We now have a pauper military, and it's a terrible, terrible thing. Donald, thank you for the call. Richard in Tremont, Illinois. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Yes. I'm too poor to do it for intellectual property, but on Iran, Tom, I think we ought to do what Bush did and take those 47 senators and put them on decks of cards. And then the National Democratic Committee could sell them for $10 a piece.
Oh,
a pack.
Wow.
Fundraising.
Yeah, there is an actual money-making opportunity that if anybody's watching, I mean, there are companies out there that will make custom decks of cards for you. You simply provide them with the art. You would have to come up with funny names for each of these 47 senators. And then presumably there would be, you have to take it to 52 for a deck of cards, right? So that's another five that you would need. You'd have to come up with, five jokers or something. I don't know. But, I'd buy a deck of cards like that for 10 or 20 bucks. Sure.
I'm retired. I don't want to get involved in doing it. But as I say, the National Democratic Committee, if they want to run with AI, that's fine.
Yeah, it's a great suggestion. Thank you very much for that, Richard. I appreciate the call. Rob in Phoenix. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Yes, how's it going? I think what's going on is they're missing, the Democrats are missing a big opportunity here. They've been handed 47 senators. They can attack them all at once at the same time, reverse the tables very quickly by making it the Democratic Benghazi. We should be demanding subpoenas on all their personal emails that may be related to this topic and just start doing a, you know, just cast a very big net and just keep this going for the next year and a half.
I agree, Rob. Here's the problem. A congressional committee can only have subpoena power if given that power by the leadership of the Senate or the House. The leadership of the House and Senate are Republicans. They are not giving any Democrats subpoena power. They will not allow this to happen, what you're describing.
Okay, we can still demand it and just keep the message alive.
Because
Democrats usually let this die out, and we got a perfect opportunity to turn the table. Every time they bring up Hillary in emails, this should be the first things out of their mouth, saying, well, we agree we should also get the 47 other ones. And just change the subject, try to derail them, and keep, you know, because we never push back enough to get them on the defense.
Well, and for that matter, what about the 6 million missing White House emails from 2006 when there was that whole judge scandal thing going on around the White House? And
exactly, but you know, and instead of, we should just laser focus in on the 47 and make it current. And
right.
Say, this is what's going on, this is what happened, you know, go after them.
There you go. I'm with you, Rob. I'm with you. Good one. Thank you. Randy in Ottawa, Iowa. Hey, Randy.
Good day, Tom.
You called Senators Grassley and Ernst?
Yes, I did, and I had a second comment, if you'll allow me the time after that.
Mm-hmm.
I called those two senators, and basically I was spoke clearly that I asked them if they signed it, and they both acknowledged that they did or their people did. And I told them that I felt that Tom Cotton was a borderline idiot and that I was really disappointed in their actions. And after that, I'd like to comment on the on the email. This email thing that we're talking about is a moot point. And the reason it's a moot point is part of the...
You're talking about Hillary Clinton's emails?
Yes.
Yeah,
the Patriot Act, there was an executive order that George Bush signed stating that, and it was retroactive to cover President Clinton. It was retroactive to cover his father, and it would be and it would cover Obama, that their work product and or their archives could be kept secret away from the public, and it would be up to the public to sue and pay for the defense of the president or the official to obtain this information. And it was part of the Patriot Act, and I cannot recall exactly the name of it, sir. But
I think that might be the reason why there have been two attempts to reform FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, to loosen it up and make it easier for people to get information out of the government. Both those attempts have been shot down by Republicans over the last 6 years. But there have been two attempts to reform the Freedom of Information Act. And that's what I think, you know, if these Republicans are genuinely concerned about Hillary's emails, let them make sure that such a thing never happens again by strengthening the Freedom of Information Act. Randy, thanks for the call. Fascinating. And thanks for calling your senators. Good on you. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show. So please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Rob Call on the line with us, old friend of mine and author, founder of opednews.com, as an opinion editorial, opednews.com. And he's also the host of the Rob Call Bottom-Up Radio Show. Hey, Rob, welcome back.
Hey, thanks. Great to be here.
Great to have you with us. You published a heck of a piece here the other day, The Power and Danger of Complexity and Secrecy. Tell us what this is about.
Well, there's a website, opencorporates.com. They have collected all the different information about subsidiaries of corporations, and it's really mind-blowing. Goldman Sachs, for example, has over 4,000 subsidiaries. We've had a lot of conversations, Tom, about corporate personhood and the idea of holding corporations accountable. Imagine how impossible that is when you have thousands of corporations that are subsidiaries of a main corporation. So you're not just dealing with Goldman Sachs, you're dealing with over 4,000 different entities that are sometimes 10 times removed, 10 layers down. Talk about the idea of being able to hide things and keep secrets, particularly criminality.
The example that I think most Americans, at least of a certain age, might be familiar with is Enron. Enron had over 800 companies, if my recollection is correct. And what Ken Lay had become a master at doing, and in fact the reason why he pushed Phil Graham, whose wife Wendy was on his board of directors, to push through Graham Leach Bliley and blow up Glass-Steagall, was that the banks were starting to get suspicious of what Ken Lay was up to, and he wanted to own his own bank. So what Enron did is they moved all the profits into companies that had, also substantial losses or were overseas or offshore in ways that they wouldn't have to pay taxes on the profits. And then they moved all the losses into companies that they could hide from the banks so that they looked profitable. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, that's just the start. That's just hiding money. But right. Who knows what other kinds of criminality can be going on. If you look at, there's a graph that I grabbed from Open Corporates that shows a kind of a map of Goldman Sachs, and there are a huge collection, hundreds, at least hundreds, maybe 1,000, in the Cayman Islands alone.
Wow.
Why? It's unbelievable.
What are they doing with all those companies in the Cayman Islands?
Yeah, that is the question, isn't it?
Is each company hiding the wealth of one particular billionaire?
Well, a lot of them are set up so that they're 99% owned by one company, and then there's one share that goes to someone or some other organization. It's a way to keep control without having to report total ownership, things like that. And some of them are for insurance, some of them are for banking. If you start thinking about how bad this is, we have a system that is far, far further away from accountability and accessibility than we imagined.
Yeah, the whole Milton Friedman libertarian theory rests on the assumption that everyone has perfect information. You know, for a perfect marketplace to work, everything has to be completely transparent, and this is the exact opposite of that.
Well, transparency is something that is not good for dishonesty and deception. And that's what we have.
Which is the new corporate standard. I mean, this is the name of the game, is extract money from the American people and from our country. This is truly
extraction. Extraction is what corporations do, and they do it without caring about people.
Right.
Are there
suggestions for how to solve this problem?
I haven't seen anybody see it as a problem, really. I mean, it's what it is. And yeah. It's the way corporations work. If you look at Facebook, it has similar webs like this.
Sure.
And, you know, it's like these nets in the ocean that go for miles and miles that catch and kill everything that they encounter. Right. These are toxic, dangerous webs, networks that I really didn't know about them until I first encountered this website. And it's a neat website, Open Corporates, which I have nothing to do with except that I think it's a useful tool that you can go in there and search it. Right. They have a page where they show each of the different banks and how they have thousands of these corporations.
OpenCorporates.com.
I think that we need,
I think,
and the article, by the way, is at opednews.com/complexity. I made a simple URL for it.
Okay.
But I think it's the transparency is the issue. I think that we need some kinds of laws that say if you're a small business and you have one corporation, fine. But if you have more than that, you've got to declare them and make them public and visible. And then we can start looking at the kind of problems that we encounter when we see these corporations all over the world. Right. It's hard to come up with words, but it's so big, it's so ugly that it's mind-boggling, really.
Yeah, yeah, it really and truly is remarkable. Rob Call, he's the publisher, founder of opednews.com and opednews.com/complexity for this article, The Power and Danger of Complexity and Secrecy, and the story of Chris Taggart and all the great work that they're doing. Rob, thanks for dropping by today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. My pleasure. Good talking with you. Back to the topic du jour. One other thing I wanted to get into here. Let me just go through this before I pick up your calls, and then we'll get into this is a survey that was done of 1,500 likely 2016 voters, Republicans, Democrats, Independents. It was conducted by GBA Strategies on behalf of the Progressive Change Institute. And this is a fairly solid nonpartisan study. Just as we go through this list, just consider the reality of each one of these things. Do you support, oppose, neutral, no response, right? Do you support allowing the government to negotiate drug prices? This would be Medicare Part D. 79% of Americans support allowing the government to negotiate drug prices. Only 12% are opposed to that. 79%. It would save us billions, hundreds of billions of dollars, because Medicare can't negotiate with the drug companies. 79% of Americans want it. Are we going to get it? No. Because the wealthy drug companies don't want us to get it. Okay. 78% of Americans say we should give students the same low interest rates as big banks. Goldman Sachs can borrow money at a half of 1%, at 0.2% right now from the Fed. Why can't you? 78% of Americans think students should be able to borrow at the same low rate that banks can. But it's not going to happen because the for-profit student industry and the for-profit banking industry don't want it to happen. These are, you know, A, this is kind of a where America's at, and B, it's how locked in America is by corporate power as a result of a series of horrible Supreme Court decisions. 77% of Americans want universal pre-kindergarten. 75% of Americans want fair trade that protects workers, the environment, and jobs. 74% want to end loopholes for corporations who ship jobs overseas. 73% want to end gerrymandering. 72% want to let homeowners pay down their mortgages with a 401k. None of these things are going to happen because vested interests who own, by and large, Republicans will not allow them to happen. 71% of Americans want every American to be able to buy into Medicare. 71% of Americans want a single payer option. It ain't going to happen. 71% want to all corporations to disclose all their money is spent on politics and lobbying.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
71% of people may want it, but hey, you know, more than 50% of your legislature is owned by the fat cats. It ain't going to happen. Welcome back. Bert, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Placerville, California. Hey, Bert, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, Tom. It's Placerville, California.
Placerville. Thank you.
I just wanted to say that
I'm a registered Republican, have been since 1972 because my dad was, and I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, what I wanted to say is, unless Republican listeners start renouncing 47 traitors, then they would be considered traitors also, and the party should be called the GOP-OP, Grand Party of Traitors.
GOPOT. There you go. Or the GOT. A very good one, Bert.
Yeah. Party of Traitors. Yeah, that'll there work.
Okay. Bert, thanks for the call. And thanks for being a rational Republican. We need more rational Republicans. I appreciate the call. Great to hear from you. Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Yeah, I want to know how this guy who doesn't represent me, he's not in my district, can negotiate an international treaty with a foreign government. That's sedition. I don't call it treason. It's sedition.
Well, he's not trying to negotiate it. He's trying to blow it up, which is even worse. Yes, that is sedition.
Well, they should tell the Iranians, these people want to kill you. These are the people that want to go to war against you.
Right.
And you're taking their letter. They should burn it up and send it back in a box of ashes.
Yeah. Yeah, and the bad news, Corky, is yesterday Tehran was saying, this letter from the Republicans, this is just propaganda. Today, the Iranians are saying, this letter from the Republicans demonstrates to us that we can't trust the United States, which obviously is the goal of the letter. It basically says, you can't trust this president. And,
yeah.
You know, if...
I've been telling you, the military-industrial complex wants a war.
Right.
They need money.
Right.
They haven't had a good money war in... Well, since the end of Vietnam.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
a good...
Well, they made a hell of a lot of money on Iraq and Afghanistan, Corky. They made a hell of a lot of money.
Nowhere near what they made on Vietnam.
Yeah.
I mean, they were bathing in $1,000 bills during Vietnam.
Right.
With all the shenanigans.
Yeah.
And the Gulf War, yeah, what happened to, $6 billion on pallets?
Yep, $6 billion, enough you could see it from outer space. It has vanished. Nobody knows where it is.
Yeah. I want these guys brought up on sedition. I don't want them for treason. I want them for sedition.
Yeah.
Because you don't represent me. You have no right to speak on international matters for me.
Have you called Tehran Tom's office? Have you called Tehran Tom's office?
No, I haven't called because I couldn't be... I would get arrested by the military police.
Don't make threats, Corky, if you don't want to get arrested.
I mean, well, it's just getting to this point where these people come in here and they think they're gods if they go to Congress or the Senate. You ain't gods. You just represent a small portion of the entire United States.
Yeah.
Senators have more say because they represent a bigger portion of the United States. Congressmen...
Well, you know, Tom Cotton, the main cover that he has is that he's from Arkansas. And, you know, there's a half a dozen of these southern states that are run by a retrograde white power structure. I think they are run by people who have, who all experience brain damage at birth or something. I can't figure it. Corky, thanks for the call. We'll be back. Past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Richard in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Richard, what's on your mind?
Hey, Mr. Harbin. I want to first of all tell you that you are truly a godsend. And every African-American friend of mine I know, I beg them to listen to your show.
Well, thank you.
I just want you to know that. And I called Rubio and spoke to someone. I also left a message on a machine. And I also... emailed him, and the gist of what I told him was, I'm a veteran, and I'm highly, highly offended of what he did. People died because of some of the things that happened with Iran, you know, some of that terrorist dealings.
Mm-hmm.
And for Rubio to do what he did, some of my brothers and sisters died, and that's what I consider them, people in the military. And I told him it was his aide, it was a complete disgrace of what he did.
Yeah. How'd they respond?
didn't say one word, not one word.
Wow.
I spoke for about maybe 3 minutes. They didn't say one word.
Wow.
And then when I finished, he said, I'll make sure I'll get the message to the senator.
Well, but good on you, Richard.
They know that they're wrong. They know that you don't do that to a president.
Yeah.
I mean, but I said the hate for him is so bad, but that they can't even control themselves.
Yeah. Well, today, one of the, a member of one of the Republican staffers came, or a staffer for one of these Republican guys came out and said, well, it was cheeky what we were doing. And another staffer said, the problem is that the White House doesn't have a sense of humor. Right. This is the kind of stuff that people start saying when they want to say oops, but they don't, but they're, you know, they're politically unwilling to say oops. And I think you're right, Richard. I think they're getting it, that what they did is terrible. And I think that, frankly, we need to keep contacting them. And
now we know what they meant when they said they want the country back. Now we understand.
Yeah. There you go. Richard, excellent point. Thank you for the call, and thank you for listening to Sirius. Brian in Woodridge, Illinois, listening on CPT. Hey, Brian.
Hello, Tom Hartman. How are you?
I am a big fan
of yours.
Thank you.
I just called U.S. Senator Mark Kirk. He's, I'm from the great state here, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the other day that he wasn't one of the signers, and I actually made a mistake of calling him and congratulating him, not signing it, but I rectified that, talked to someone,
mm-hmm.
and, gave him a polite earful. But I wanted to ask this guy, the caller didn't really say, or that, the guy, it's not anyone, working, it's just the staff. I wasn't going to be mean to him, but I said, what would this do if the shoe was on the other foot? How would Republicans be acting if Democrats did this? Right. I go, nowhere, it's never happened.
Yeah,
and he didn't say much.
If the Democrats in the Senate had sent a letter to Saddam Hussein saying, George Bush is all bluster.
I said, hey, would you be able to give me, all I want to say is to the rest of the people listening is, get these people to give you information to show up to town meetings and or wherever these people are going to be.
Yeah.
And really call them out on it.
Yep.
Because, and he did. He did give me information for this stuff. He told me where to go online. But I another one too is ask these people that are taking the calls. They're usually just volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, is this really the party that you want to subscribe to? Do they represent you? He had no answer to that. I said, honestly, is this, put the politics aside, and is this good for America? And he was like, well, you didn't say anything, but I did ask a question. I wanted you to know. He said, I asked, were Democrats allowed to sign this open letter as well? Did they even know? He said, no, I don't think so. And then he said right away, but I don't know.
Yeah.
And I was like, you don't know? He goes, no, I don't have that information. I go, oh, okay. So I don't know if they were.
I don't think they were, because if any Democrat had been given an advance letter of this or a copy of this letter before it went out, they would have blown the top off it. And I think the Republicans wanted to make sure that this letter was in the hands of the Iranians before the Democrats had an opportunity to stop them or shame them. But good on you, Brian, for calling Mark Kirk's office. And thanks for reporting back to us what happened. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Robert in Naples, Florida. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, thank you. Great show today.
Thank you.
I think we have an opportunity as Democrats to label these 47 and to divide and conquer them now. Because basically, I live here in Florida. Marco Rubio, he had another problem with President Obama when he came to Cuba. Mm-hmm. I think we need to take, his vote of with these other 47s and bring it to his constituency of older Cuban people and say, listen, did he write a letter on your behalf to Fidel or Fidel's younger brother there, Ralph?
Right.
Saying he didn't believe with the president's policy and that to disregard what he says because in 2 years, whatever. I mean, I think that is the best way to get these people back, is to make them regret the day they signed this piece of paper.
Yeah.
And go to their people and their home base and say, wait a minute, he'll do anything for those people, but he won't do anything for you.
Right.
And remind them and constantly say, hey, where are these people's best wishes, with you or for somebody else?
Yeah, I'm with you. Good point, Robert. Thank you for the call. Kathy in Madison, Wisconsin. Just a quick minute to the break, Kathy.
Oh, I don't know if I can be quick, but I've been contacting representatives and senators for several days now, trying to get them to stand up and have a backbone and hold a joint press conference on the Capitol steps to condemn this in the greatest possible way. Because my guess is that 80% of the people in this country right now have no idea that this happened because they don't get the kind of news that you put out.
Right.
And that of those, they don't understand how serious this is. This is so serious because it has to do with someone trying to prevent nuclear war while another person is doing what? Trying to have it?
Yeah. Yeah, this is the astonishing thing, Kathy. It's what the president pointed out. You know, these guys just aligned themselves with the hardliners in Iraq. The hardcore right-wingers in the United States Senate form a bond with the hardcore right-wingers among the Ayatollahs in Iraq. And it's like, if that doesn't tell you what's going on, I don't know what does. Kathy, thank you for the call. You're right. We do need a more active response.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
But, you know, the Republicans and, of course, Fox so-called News are going to do everything they can to keep the focus on Hillary Clinton rather than what's going on here. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Borowitz Report. Andy Borowitz, his news, stating that their continuing hostilities are a threat to world peace. Iran has offered to mediate talks between congressional Republicans and President Obama. Iran's Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei made the offer one day after Iran received what he called a worrisome letter from Republican leaders, which suggested to him that, quote, the relationship between the Republicans and Obama has dangerously deteriorated. Khamenei said tensions between these two historic enemies have been high in recent years, but we believe they are now at a boiling point. As a result, Iran feels it must offer itself as a peacemaker. He said that Iran was the logical choice to jumpstart negotiations between Obama and Republicans because it has become clear that both sides currently talk more to Iran than to each other. Right. He invited Obama and the Republicans to meet in Tehran. I'm sure Tehran Tom would love that. To hash out their differences and called on world powers to force the two bitter foes to the bargaining table, adding, it is time to stop the madness. Right. President Obama, after Iran made its offer, said he was willing to meet with his congressional adversaries under the auspices of Tehran, but questioned whether any deal reached with Republicans is worth the paper it's printed on. For their part, the Republicans said they would only agree to talks if there were no preconditions, such as recognizing President Obama's existence. Right. It's amazing. It's just amazing. I'm going to continue through my list. Actually, I'm going to start the next hour with this. All the things that America would have if we didn't have the Supreme Court putting corporations and billionaires in charge of our political process. I'll tell you in advance, that's the list that I'm going to go through in 30 minutes. Oh, actually, it'll be a little longer than that because Kevin Camps is going to be with us in 30 minutes to talk about today is the fourth anniversary of Fukushima. But after that, I'll get into this. But for right now, Julian in Boone, North Carolina. Hey, Julian, what's up?
Hey, how are you? I'm a new listener.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Sirius.
Hey, you know, I mean, I may be just kind of a know-nothing college student right now, but I'm also a veteran. And, you know, on the topic of the 47 Republican senators that sent the letter to Iran, my opinion is, you know, these senators, they call Barack Obama Mr. President for a reason. You know, as far as I know, that there is a chain of command that does work in this country. And I know while I was in the Navy, if I would have undermined my boss, I could have been sent to the brig.
Yep.
And I don't understand how these people who also kind of govern the military feel that it's okay to do that when it's not okay for, you know, people like myself to do that as well.
Right. Well, they do have a different position than you had in the military, and they do have certain privileges. My legal opinion on this, and I'm not a lawyer, but for what it's worth, is that they haven't broken any laws, but they have committed a crime against democracy, you can go to jail crime, but a horrible offense. I mean, it's like walking up to somebody and saying something just terribly inappropriate. It doesn't mean you go to jail, but, you know, that person's not going to be real excited to talk to you in the future.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm with you, Julian. I think you've nailed it. And the president, according to the Constitution, is the commander in chief of the military, and he's also our chief foreign affairs officer. He runs the Department of State. It comes out of his office, which is, you know, our foreign affairs action, and of course the Department of Defense. So spot on. Julian, thank you for the call. Well said. Kelly in Lake Havasu City, Arizona. Hey, Kelly, what's up?
Hey, Professor. Got a quick list, because the longer I stay on hold, it seems the more I add to the list. But
okay.
I would say that the Republicans are no longer Republicans or Tea Party, that they're more like the Whig Party. They'd like to go back to being under the first corporation. Benghazi is the perfect riddle for the Republicans, because the CIA had an operation going on. That's why you'll never get to the bottom of the truth, because it's all secret.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want emails, they should go to the NSA and get everybody's emails.
You're right.
Right.
They want Hillary Clinton's emails? Just call up whoever's the head of the NSA right now.
Member of Congress. Let's just go through all of their emails with the NSA. They've got everything. So let's get their phone calls, their text messages, everything.
Yeah.
And then one last thing real quick is all calls to Republicans seem to have the same response, which is beep, leave your message.
Right. Yeah, that's,
you know, you don't get a person when you call a Republican member of Congress. You get an answering machine.
Yeah, increasingly that's the case. You're absolutely right, Kelly. Kelly, and it's because Republicans know that they have absolutely nothing to offer the American people. The, you know, everything that the Republicans do is for people who make, you know, over $500,000 a year, or people who are worth over, you know, multiple millions, or big corporations that are going to grease their palms. And it's just that simple. That's, you know, the Republican Party. People who vote Republican fall into one of two very simple categories. They are either rich or they are suckers. And the Republican Party has figured out how to play their suckers just brilliantly, particularly with the help of the Fox so-called news channel. Kelly, thanks for the call. Excellent point. Matthew in Springfield, Virginia. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Tom. I want to talk about with the criticism of Tom Cotton. You have the Republicans, you know, and the right-wingers rushing his defense, saying, you know, how dare you criticize him for this? He's a combat veteran.
Right.
Yeah, that's good. He served his country. That's all well and good. But on the flip side, it's fine for the Republicans to come out and criticize veterans like Tammy Duckworth, like Max Cleland, like John Kerry, and call them, you know, unpatriotic, or brain-run commercials with Osama bin Laden, or saying, you know, their service doesn't mean as much because they talk about it too much.
Right.
And, you know, you have two of those veterans who lost limbs while they were fighting, and it's just, yeah, I'm sick of this with the Republicans. You know, they're only, you know, war veterans only a hero if they're a Republican in their eyes.
Right.
If they're a Democrat, oh, they're not a hero.
Right.
No matter what they did or what they sacrificed.
Well, this is part of this, because the Republicans' entire agenda is actually genuinely economic. The Republican Party is the party of the fat cats, of the billionaires, big business, and international corporations. But in order to hold power, there's not enough fat cats in America to vote for them, that they have to get the suckers, right? In addition to the rich Republicans, they have to get the sucker Republicans. And so to those people who are very concerned about their Christian religion, for example, they'll reach out to them. To those Republicans who think that abortion is a sin, they'll reach out to them. To those Republicans who think that, at Christmas, everybody should say Merry Christmas, they'll reach out to them. Those Republicans who don't like people of color, they'll reach out to them. Those Republicans who hate immigrants or who are afraid, they'll reach out to them. And they pull together this coalition of basically the bigoted, the fearful, the timid, and the misinformed, and keep them that way, and, you know, which is Fox News' job and right-wing hate radio's job. And, then they try to deify veterans when it suits them. But then they spit on veterans when it doesn't suit them. It's totally astonishing. Matthew, thank you for the call. Well said. Bill in Black Canyon, Arizona. Hey, Bill, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Great.
Hey, just a quick comment about Hillary's emails.
Uh-huh.
It seems just amazing to me that after 2 years and six separate investigations into Hillary and Benghazi, this is the first time they've ever discovered the fact that she was operating on a private website?
I'm guessing that they've known this for a long time, and they have tried to time this release for maximum political benefit.
That's exactly my thinking, too.
Right. If they can harm her before she even announces her presidential ambitions, then that may empower, you know, Martin O'Malley or somebody else like that to challenge her, and that challenge might weaken her to the point where she doesn't win. I mean, that was back before we all learned that the Reagan campaign had cut a deal with the Ayatollah. That was the conventional wisdom about why Jimmy Carter lost, was because Teddy Kennedy challenged him in a primary, a sitting president, and that wounded him to the point where, you know, he couldn't beat Reagan. Well, it actually didn't. The fact of the matter is he was fine in the polls right up until maybe the last 4 weeks or so of the, you know, before the election. And that was all of that was his popularity was collapsing because he couldn't get the hostages freed. And little did he know that the Bill Casey had cut a deal with the Ayatollahs. But interesting point. Thank you, Bill. Thanks for the call. Diana in Agoura Hills, California. Hey, Diana.
Hi there, Tom. I love your show. I love learning historical facts from you. Just can't say enough. You're the best.
Thank you.
I wanted to point out that we can't shame the Republicans. They have no shame. And I know you mention often, and it bears mentioning, that all of this behavior on the part of the Republicans is so bigoted and racist. They're trying to destroy President Obama's legacy. So why can't we use this moment that they've teed up, not only calling them traitors, but calling them racists, that they're flat out behaving in a racist fashion, given that they're trying to destroy President Obama? Would they be doing this to a white president? I doubt it.
I doubt it.
And maybe if we shame them sufficiently, given that this concept of racism is constantly in the news these days, maybe they'll be shamed into passing a new voters' rights law.
Yeah. I don't recall an opposition party shouting "you lie" at a white president ever in the history of the country. I don't recall an opposition party questioning whether a white president is actually a citizen of the United States or a natural born citizen. And in fact, you've got Ted Cruz, whose father is Cuban, whose mother was Canadian, I believe. Maybe she was American, but he was born in Canada. And nobody is saying, hey, is Ted Cruz a natural born citizen? But, you know, they go to all this stuff about Obama. Why? Because Obama's skin is much darker than Ted Cruz. I'm with you, Diana. I think racism is a big piece of this. Thank you very much. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before that.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
15 minutes before the hour, we'll be back with more of your calls, my thoughts, the news of the day right after this. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. Patty in Hartstein, how do you say that? Hartstein Island, Washington?
Good morning. Hartstein Island, yes.
Great. Hey, Patty.
First of all, thank you for giving all of us a voice. Bless you for that.
Well, thank you, and thanks for listening to KBCS.
Thank you. I have a quick question and then a comment, and I'll take them off air so you can get more folk in.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I was wondering, there's four or five other countries involved in the negotiations with Iran, and I'm wondering, are our 47 senators breaking any of their laws? That's my question.
Mm-hmm.
My comment is that I used to be a chef for an exclusive catering company in Klein Village, Nevada, which is commonly known as Income Village. It's comprised of millionaires, billionaires, politicians. And in the 1990s, I heard the most interesting conversations. Being the chef, I was allowed to go out and schmooze. And from Jack Kemp, vice presidential on down, I was at parties that were unbelievable. And I used to hear them talking about offshoring in the Cayman Islands. This is the mid and late 1990s.
Hmm.
And it took years before I understood what the heck they were talking about. So I've been upset about this since the 1990s, and I'm glad that everybody else is waking up to this. And I just will say thank you again, and I'll get off the air so more folks
sure
can have their
voice. Well, let me answer your question, Patty. You were asking what other countries are involved. It's called the G5 Plus One. And the reason why is it's the five permanent members of the United Nations Security Council plus Germany. And so the five permanent members of the UN Security Council are the United States, China, Russia, France, and England. And so plus Germany. So those are the six countries that are involved in these talks. And I don't know, and I, you know, to the best of my knowledge, these 47 U.S. senators have not broken the laws of any of those countries. But the fact of the matter is that they're acting as if, and frankly, our press is acting as if this is purely a bilateral negotiation, two countries, you know, the United States and Iran. And it's not. It's not a bilateral negotiation. It's a negotiation between six nations and Iran, seven countries altogether. And every one of those countries is going to sign on the bottom line. Every single one of those countries is going to, you know, sign off on this. In fact, in all probability, if this agreement is worked out right, it will go to the United Nations. That's why they've got the five permanent members of the Security Council. So, you know, the five members who could veto this thing in the talks, so that everybody will say, yes, we like this deal. This is a deal that we can live with. And you know, what these Republicans are doing is just, you know, basically blowing up an international negotiation with three countries that are very close allies of the United States, Germany, England, and France, and two countries that are theoretically our allies and that we do a lot of business with, Russia and China. And go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could the UN, are there UN sanctions for interference?
Not to the best of my knowledge, no. The UN grants an enormously high level of autonomy to the individual countries that are members. That was, you know, pretty much the condition of membership that, I mean, that's what blew up the League of Nations, was the fear on the part of Americans that they were signing away sovereignty by signing, you know, the treaties necessary to become part of the League of Nations. After World War II, we were willing to do that. You know, the League of Nations might have avoided World War II, but no, I don't believe that the United Nations has that kind of power. Patty, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening to KBCS. Up next, Ellen Ratner in Sudan. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and let's check in with Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, in South Sudan, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, the charity that Ellen runs from South Sudan, and free-don.org. Hi, Ellen.
Well, hi, Tom. I've got to tell you, though, I call this the international edition of the Tom Hartman Show, and today I'm in Juba, which is where I'm able to Skype. It's up in the bushes, you know, we're here. And extremely difficult is not that basically doesn't exist. In Juba, there is internet. It's not as fast as we would like it. There's certainly internet. There's a couple of issues that are making their way around here. One is the Boko Haram stuff. And if you, as you
look at the map of the world, or the map of Africa, and sort of the upper half of Africa is very Muslim and the lower half is quite Christian. Well, South Sudan, which got its independence in 2011, is sort of between the two. And we do know that ISIS, ISIL, however you want to call it, has put in their national plan, or their international plan, taking over South Sudan. So if South Sudan is destabilized, which of course has been a big problem because of the leadership of Salva Kiir, who you met, and Riek Machar, who neither of us met, and the fired vice president, they haven't been able to come up to an agreement in Addis Ababa, then, you know, people are worried that it opens it up to terrorism.
Hmm.
And that's a major problem.
Yeah, it is.
And the other problem... The other problem that reverberates from the United States, well, there's actually several that are reverberating from the United States right now, and one is this letter that the Republicans wrote, you know, directly to the leadership of Iran, and, you know, China's all over Africa, but they speak with one voice. If we're speaking with two voices, how do we know who to relate to, who we should be involved, I mean, who, not we. How do they know who to relate to? They don't. And that is a huge problem. The Republicans really put the United States, in my view, at risk.
Wow. We're talking now, with Ellen Ratner in Africa, in South Sudan, in Central Africa. And in Africa, you're hearing that the Republican letter is causing our allies around the world, or even potential adversaries, to say, why are we negotiating with America if the Republicans say that we can't trust America?
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. Two other interesting things. Of course, there is a human trafficking bill going through right now, particularly the Senate. And you know they want to increase the Hyde Amendment, the anti-choice amendment
right.
That Henry Hyde had put in. And this is another international issue that is going to have broad applications, particularly in a place like Africa where there is so much human trafficking, which you have seen for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have. With you.
And you just wonder, what planet are these guys on?
Well, they're far more interested.
Right.
I would submit to you, Ellen, that the Republicans who took this human trafficking bill and inserted an anti-abortion clause into it are more interested in satisfying the base of the Republican Party, the anti-abortion base, than they are anything else. Because Republicans, their entire agenda is economic. It's all about what's good for billionaires and what's good for big corporations. And you can't win elections with that. You've got to bring along a whole bunch of little fragmented crazy groups. And one of them is the anti-abortion fanatics, not people who are kind of moderately anti-abortion, but just the people who are the anti-abortion fanatics. This was a shout out to them. They need them to win elections.
Absolutely. And it's not taking into account what's really going on in the rest of the world.
Right. Yeah. It's a tragedy.
One other thing, and then you're free to ask me whatever about here, but you know, there has been, and we do know that Elizabeth Warren has been very out front around the trade issues. Mm-hmm. The Asian Pacific trade being, of course, the most recent one on the table. And the issue is this sort of investor-state dispute settlement, as I understand it,
right.
And whether there would be how these disputes get settled, and is it really the oligarchs, or as you say, the banksters, that are going to be involved in this and really running the show, or are actual people and laws of various states going to get involved? And Elizabeth Warren has been on this. Another international issue. Now, I realize I'm loading you up with international issues today, but I'm international, so I've been focusing a lot on that.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
And
go ahead.
Well, so our concern is, of course, trade issues again with Africa. And, you know, the United States is in one hand, China's in another place with it. And where does China sort of come in on other trade issues that are going to affect places like Africa, let alone Asian Pacific?
Right. Excellent questions. And we'll just have to see how this all shakes out. Ellen, how are you doing? How has your trip to South Sudan been so far? What are you seeing? How are you feeling?
Well, you know, we're because there is a conflict here, it's very hard for this country to move ahead. And we went to an IDP camp, Tom. There are 2 million people displaced out of almost 11 million people here living with United Nations plastic around them, and that's just basically about it. Not enough medical care, not enough food, very hard to get food to people, and this is near Juba. Imagine what it's like out in the bush or in other places that people are. So it's very difficult. Right now we're quite safe, but of course we're not up in the areas that are disputed. There's also one oil field operating here, two have closed. So that's sort of another issue just in terms of how does a country like this get cash. And places like where you were, Northern Brother Ghazal, it's apparently, if not the highest, one of the top two or three highest maternal mortality rates in the world.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service live from South Sudan, in Juba, South Sudan. Ellen, stay safe, please.
Thank you.
Thank you for being with us. And goatsfortheoldgoat.com is Ellen's charity. Go check it out. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back to Media for the Rest of Us, the Tom Hartmann Program. With me in the studio, I'm really pleased to have Kevin Camps, the nuclear watchdog, nuclear waste watchdog at Beyond Nuclear, beyondnuclear.org. Hey, Kevin, welcome.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you with us. So today is the fourth anniversary of the Fukushima meltdown. What's the status of Fukushima right now?
Well, I like to start with a little good news because it's so rare. They finally managed to get the high-level radioactive waste out of the Unit 4 pool. That was in December, and that was a very precarious situation. The building was on the brink of collapse. The pool could have caught on fire if that had happened with a drain down of the cooling water.
That's the one where it was like pulling cigarettes out of a crushed pack. I mean, that's amazing that they did it.
That's the good news. It took them 4 years to do that. They had to rebuild the structure of the building to support the crane and then do the work. But there's three other high-level radioactive waste storage pools in destroyed buildings there. You've got units 1, 2, and 3 that suffered the meltdowns.
Right.
And those pools still have the waste in them. And unit 3 is the most precarious. It's full of 50 tons of debris that rained down after the large-scale explosion. And incredibly, Tokyo Electric managed to drop a heavy piece of equipment accidentally into the pool relatively recently. So the damage to that fuel in Unit 3 is currently unknown. It could be much more difficult than the Unit 4 operation. And those pools, too, are vulnerable to a large earthquake that drains their cooling water. We're not out of the woods, even with the high-level waste. And then, of course, the melted cores are still missing in action. Nobody knows exactly where they are. Are they within damaged containment? Are they sitting in the groundwater? Nobody knows. Nobody can say.
How much radiation have Japanese and Americans been exposed to as a consequence of this?
Well, there's big picture numbers like 700 petabecquerels. That's a lot of zeros. That's how much has gotten out. But the thing is, you have to add to that every day because there's still a flow every day on a good day, so to speak, of 300 tons of radioactively contaminated groundwater going into the ocean. But there are many bad days, and it turns out that there were many bad days that Tokyo Electric kept quiet for the last 10 months, just in the last week or two, admitting that highly radioactive water was flowing down drainage ditches. They finally figured out what's going on. They just didn't tell people about it for 10 months. That was going directly into the ocean.
Wow.
And just yesterday, another big spill, because some days are very bad, and they have very big spills. This spill was 747 tons of highly radioactive rainwater overflow leaking through drainage systems they've built that are shoddily built and leaking, apparently. So they lost a lot of water overnight. It was visible, and they did the math, and they figured it was close to 750 tons of rainwater containing levels of radioactivity measured in the thousands of becquerels per liter.
So one becquerel is, you're talking about 700, did you say petabecquerels?
Yeah,
700?
That's the grand
figure.
So a peta
is a trillion, right?
I think it's beyond that. It's 15 or 18 zeros.
Wow.
That's how much radioactivity was discharged to the atmosphere.
Like 1,000 trillion.
And you've got to add these daily and bad day discharges into the ocean at this
and
point.
And one becquerel would do what to a human being?
Well, it's a radioactive disintegration per second, which goes on each second. You know, and depends on the isotope. Cesium is hazardous for 300 to 600 years. That's how long it's decaying. Others, much longer than that.
Right.
So every single becquerel, every single radioactive disintegration carries the potential for initiating a cancer or a genetic defect, chances are it won't, because these are microscopic energy emissions. But when you start having billions and trillions and quadrillions and keep going.
And all it takes is actually one.
It only takes one, technically. The National Academy of Sciences in the United States has affirmed for decades in these reports called Biological Effects of Ionizing Radioactivity that any exposure to radioactivity, no matter how low the dose, carries a health risk for cancer.
Right.
The higher the dose, the higher the risk. And these risks accumulate over a lifetime.
There is no such thing as safe radiation exposure, even a dental X-ray. There's no safe threshold, period. We're talking with Kevin Camps, the nuclear waste watchdog at Beyond Nuclear. BeyondNuclear.org is the website. Kevin, is it possible that the strategy of the Japanese government with regard to Fukushima is just let the rain keep coming? I mean, you know, I'm thinking high-level rainwater. What that means is that rainwater is carrying bits of core with it, of disintegrated, blown up, melted out, whatever core. And that if they keep dumping enough of this high-level stuff, every time they do it, you know, it's sort of like licking the ice cream cone. You know, eventually there's no ice cream cone left. Eventually it'll all wash away into the ocean. Is that their strategy?
Well, I think these are accidents, incompetence. There are cover-ups going on. They don't like to admit what's going on until they have to, when it's convenient for them for whatever reason, public relations-wise. But I think more to your point is there is an ultimate strategy that's endorsed by the central government of the Abe administration, the Nuclear Regulation Authority, Tokyo Electric. They even have American advisors in there, former Department of Energy officials, former Nuclear Regulatory Commission chairman from the United States, getting paid by TEPCO to tell everybody, including the fisheries, that it's okay for us to dump these hundreds of thousands of tons of stored water. I mean, they are storing highly radioactive water, hoping to filter it. The filters haven't worked in years. They're saying they can do it. They'll get it done. And then once they've filtered out 60 or so of the radioactive poisons out of the 200 or so that are in this water, then they will release it to the ocean. So that means there's going to be over 100 radioactive substances in the water, including tritium, radioactive hydrogen, which, to my knowledge, is not filterable at this industrial scale.
This is like that's one of the smallest particles in creation.
It's hydrogen, it's radioactive itself, and they don't have filters for it, at least not outside of a laboratory setting that I know of.
Right. This is pretty astonishing. It's pretty awful too. What do we do? What does this mean? Well, actually, let me back up a little bit. Is there any radiation monitoring going on in Japan for people, for their food supply? I mean, if Japan depends on fish. Fish live in the ocean. The ocean has been filled with radioactive material. Are they getting irradiated? Do they know that they're getting irradiated? Do they know to level to which? Or is this just a giant uncontrolled experiment? And 40 years from now, we'll be looking back and going, oh, look at that spike in birth defects.
There is food monitoring going on. Whether it's adequate or not is another question. But, you know, compare the United States to Japan. Japan's legal limit for radioactivity in food is 100 becquerels per kilogram. That's radioactive cesium content, but it's used as a proxy for other radioactive poisons.
Right.
In the United States, our standard is 12 times weaker. We allow 1,200 becquerels per kilogram of radioactivity in our food. And what that means is food unfit for human consumption because of its radioactive contamination in Japan could be legally exported to the United States and sold on the open market. So they are, unfortunately, way ahead of us here in terms of radiation monitoring of their food supply. Ours is pre-Fukushima at this point in terms of the seafood supply.
We were in a restaurant the other day with a friend who eats fish, and he just said to the, you know, it's not a problem for me. I'm vegan. I avoid this stuff. But, yeah, he said to the waiter, where did this fish come from? And the waiter said, just a minute, I'll find out. And he came back and he said, it came from China, as far as we can tell. It was imported from Asia. I'm wondering if that came from Japan. Is Japan now a source of discount food because they can sell stuff here that they can't legally sell there? And are we being told if that's the case?
It's legal for them to do that, unfortunately, and it's a huge dereliction of duty by the U.S. federal government. Our federal agency should be monitoring the food. Our food safety standards should be much stronger. So we need to change that. We need to change it in Congress. We need to change it in the executive branch through public pressure.
Wow. Wow. So 1,200 becquerels in a kilogram of food coming from Asia, that's 1,200 radioactive disintegrations per hour, per minute?
Per second.
Per second.
Per second, ongoing.
So that's 1,200 opportunities to cause cancer every second that this food would be releasing for, depending on which radioactive isotope it is, months, years, decades, centuries.
That's right.
Astonishing. Kevin Camps, Beyond Nuclear is the website. The Nuclear Waste Watchdog at Beyond Nuclear. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Tom.
Fourth anniversary of Fukushima. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Okay, we'll be back. I want to finish my list of what America would be were it not for the Supreme Court and pick up your phone calls on your thoughts on the 47 Republican. And welcome back, Jim in Lockport, Illinois, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Jim, what's on your mind?
How are you this afternoon, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better, Jim. How about you?
Not too bad. With these 47 people, myself, it goes to show you when you lose a guy like Ted Kennedy in the Senate, how heartbreaking that is, because he would put these guys in their place. Trust me, just unbelievable.
Ted Kennedy, Robert Byrd, Everett Dirksen, Barry Goldwater, frankly. There have been some genuine statesmen from both parties and both sides of the aisle over the years. But at the moment, outside of Bernie Sanders and arguably Sherrod Brown, I think he's quite a statesman. It doesn't seem like there's a real lion left in the Senate.
Yeah, and we're losing two lionesses, too. I mean, Barbara Boxer, she's a good fighter, and also Murkowski, she was a too tough woman. You hate to see but the onus goes on us, the American people. We don't go out and vote during midterms.
Right.
And this is what we get. We get these clowns in there putting aspersions on asparagus and calves the size of cantaloupes and, like I said, all the more reason for us to go out there and talk to people. I know when I talk to people, I tell them how important it is to vote. Don't complain. Get out and vote, man. Same thing with Ferguson. The onus is they got to change things by changing and getting out and vote, man. It's so important, Tom. It really is.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you. Thank you very much, Jim. Thanks for the call. And contact your members, your senators, by all means. Kathy in Etna, Wyoming. Hey, Kathy.
Hi, Tom. I just thought I'd let you know what our senators in Wyoming, their offices had to say about this letter to Iran.
Okay.
Senator Barrasso's office, they said that they were trying to, because I started out with what was the purpose of this letter and then why did he sign on to this letter.
Mm-hmm.
And Barrasso's office said that they were trying to send a message to Iran to let them know that they should work with Congress as much as the White House. And I point blank asked, well, has any member of Congress tried to negotiate and work with Iran on any sort of deal? And they didn't. They said, they said that there are many committee meetings held. And I said, yes. I said, I see those on C-SPAN. I said, but has anyone actually tried to work with Iran? And she couldn't answer that.
Right. Because the answer is
office,
no.
Excuse me?
Because the answer is no.
Right. And Enzi's office said that Congress has to approve any negotiations. And I said, right. You ratify any treaties that are made that the White House is actually trying to do. So they're trying to thwart what the White House is trying to do.
Right.
But they're not allowing the White House to get this done because they're trying to, put out this trash. And I just got so flustered listening to them. And then to end it, I asked them what were their personal reasons to sign this letter, and they said that both of them, that they had not given any personal views at this time. And I asked that, well, as soon as they do release it, I would like something in writing to know what their personal views and reasons are to have signed this letter. And that's all I got out of them.
Yeah, these two senators. What I'm really curious is how much Tehran Tom Cotton, made in the speech that he gave to the defense contractors lobby yesterday morning, the day after he wrote this letter and sent it off. But it's interesting. Barrasso and Enzi were apparently willing allies or dupes or something. Kathy, thank you for that. Thanks for sharing your experience with us. I appreciate the call. Okay, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 20 minutes past the hour. I'm going to give you the very simply two data points and just kind of hold these in your head. And I mean, this is this poll of 1,500 likely voters in 2016 voters. It's not 2016 yet, but people who will likely vote next year. It was conducted by GBA Strategies on behalf of the Progressive Change Institute. It's a solid, nonpartisan poll. And by 67%, Americans support letting the government negotiate drug prices. By 68%, Americans support letting students, college students, have the same interest rate as big banks, which is a half of 1% or less. By 62%, Americans want everybody in America to have free universal pre-kindergarten. By 64%, Americans want fair trade that protects workers, the environment, and jobs. And there was no more of these so-called free trade agreements. Let's go back to the way it used to work. By 59%, Americans want to end tax loopholes for corporations that ship jobs overseas. Now, each one of these, of course, are opposed by Republicans. Okay, 67% of Americans want the government to negotiate drug prices. Republicans oppose it. 68% of Americans want students to get a half point interest rate, the same as the big banks. Republicans oppose it. 62% of Americans want universal pre-K. Republicans oppose it. 64% of Americans want fair trade. Republicans oppose it. 59% of Americans want to end tax loopholes for corporations that ship jobs overseas. Republicans oppose it. 60% of Americans want to end gerrymandering. Republicans oppose it. 58% of Americans, or by a 58% majority, it's actually 72% of Americans, but it's by a 58% majority, they want to let homeowners pay their mortgages with a 401k. 58% majority of Americans believe that Medicare should be available to all Americans as an option, a public option. 55%, by a 55% majority, Americans, it's actually 71% of Americans say yes, but it's 55 points higher than the support than the opposition. By 55 points, Americans want to disclose corporate spending on politics and lobbying. By 54 points, Americans want to require the NSA to get a warrant every time they spy on any of us. Again, Republicans oppose this. It ain't going to happen. By 53%, Americans want a $400 billion a year infrastructure jobs program to modernize America and to create jobs. By 53%, Republicans oppose it. It's not going to happen. By 52%, Americans want debt-free college at all public universities. In other words, free college at all public universities. 52%, Republicans oppose it. It's not going to happen. 55%, Americans want to expand Social Security benefits. 53% want to expand Social Security benefits. And 52% want a full employment act. In other words, the government is the employer of last resort. Republicans oppose all these things. They're not going to happen. By a 50% majority, it's actually 70% of people say yes. It's 50% higher. The support is 50% higher than the opposition. They want to close offshore corporate tax loopholes. Again, 67% of Americans want to retrain coal miners and oil workers for clean energy jobs. 67% of Americans want to end tax deductions for Wall Street fines. Did you know this? When Wall Street gets fined for committing a crime, they get to deduct it from their taxes. 67% of Americans say, no, that's not right. Republicans, however, want to keep it that way, so it's going to stay that way. 66% of Americans want transparency in trade negotiations. It's not going to happen. The Republicans oppose it. 65% of Americans want to eliminate the Electoral College. No, Republicans are trying to figure out how to game it. 64% of Americans want a full minimum wage for tipped workers. Republicans oppose that. 63% of Americans want to do away with the carried interest tax loophole. Most Americans don't even know what this is, but 63% of Americans are opposed to it. What it is it allows banksters on Wall Street to take a paycheck at a maximum 15% income tax rate rather than a maximum 39%. They call their income carried interest. It's a loophole. It's just plain old simple a bankster loophole. 63% of Americans want free community college for everybody. Ain't going to happen. The Republicans are opposed to it. 62% of Americans, debt-free. I just said that. 61% want shareholder approval for corporate political spending. Ain't going to happen. Republicans don't like it. 61% want a special prosecutor in all cases where police have killed someone. Republicans don't like it. It ain't going to happen. 61% of Americans are in favor of ensuring net neutrality. Well, so far, it's working. Tom Wheeler just said yes, but the Republicans have pledged to try to blow that up in the House and Senate. 59% of Americans say we should ban the revolving door for corporate executives in government. You know, the Republicans don't like that, or they do like it, so that's not going to get banned. 59% of Americans say we should tax the rich. At 50%, which is lower than the Reagan, you know, when Reagan came in, the top tax rate was 74%. 59% of Americans say at least raise that tax up to 50% for the super rich. It ain't going to happen, though. The Republicans don't want it to happen. 59% think that we should have a minimum guaranteed income. Republicans don't like it. It ain't going to happen. 58% of Americans say we should break up the big banks. Republicans don't like it. It ain't going to happen. 57% of Americans say that we should have public funding of elections and every small donation should be matched by government money. 57%. Republicans don't like it. It's not going to happen. 56% of Americans believe that there should be a central site to pay or challenge all debt. The Republicans don't like it. It ain't going to happen. I mean, the banksters don't like it. It ain't going to happen. 56% of Americans think we should have a public banking office in our post offices. Republicans don't like it. It ain't going to happen. 55% of Americans think there should be a financial transaction tax. Right? Let Wall Street pay for itself, for policing itself. Republicans don't like it. It ain't going to happen. 54% of Americans think we should tax millionaires and billionaires at a much higher rate than everybody else. Republicans don't like it. It ain't going to happen. 53% of Americans think we should have free, high-quality public child care. Republicans don't like it. It ain't going to happen. 51% of Americans think everybody should have Medicare. We should have a single-payer system. A majority of Americans. Republicans don't like it. Ain't going to happen.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Are you getting this? These are all things that the majority of Americans want that will never happen because Republicans are in office. Okay, I was sharing. This is how different America would be if we were actually a small d democracy. If we were actually a constitutionally limited, representative, democratic republic. If our elected officials actually did what the majority of Americans want. We would ban for-profit prisons by a 7% majority. Americans are in favor of that. We would reinstate Glass-Steagall by a 16% majority. Americans are in favor of that. We would have public matching for small dollar donations. 21% of Americans are in favor of that. We would reinstate Glass-Steagall. We'd have a public option for banking via the post offices. We would allow the government to negotiate drug prices. Students would have the same low rate. I mean, everything on that list. Please name for me one thing that the Republicans have done which does anywhere near as much good for America as any one of those things on that list. Come on, Republicans, you can call me and tell me. Right now there's a piece of legislation to stop human trafficking before the United States Senate. So what did the Republicans do? They slipped in a rider to make it even harder. It's already illegal because of the Hyde Amendment, but to make it even harder for anybody to squeeze an abortion out of any kind of federal funding anywhere. What does abortion have to do with human trafficking? Absolutely nothing. But, you know, the Republicans, if they're going to get elected, they've got to reach out to the suckers because the Republican Party is made up of two groups, millionaires and suckers. And so they're going after the anti-abortion suckers that, you know, and they're suckers because they believe that the Republican Party is going to do something for them. The Republican Party has been playing these people like a fiddle since 1973. They keep saying, oh, just put us in power and we'll sign legislation to end abortion. We'll overturn the Supreme Court. And the suckers keep voting for them. And they keep doing nothing. These little gestures here and there like today's, which aren't going to go anywhere, but they're really seriously, they'd rather keep abortion legal so that they can keep those people voting for them. You get it? It's a scam. Anyway, back to you. Mary Jo in Minneapolis. Hey, Mary Jo, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, hi. I just wanted to let you know that I did call all 47 of those senators.
Wow, you have more energy than me.
Well, you know, you can just use that one number, and then you just keep going back to that and ask for a different senator's office. So
you're right. And the number, by the way, for people
do that.
For people who may want to know.
I was surprised at how easy it was to reach all of them.
Yeah.
I would have thought, you know, the switchboards would be full with people calling, but apparently they weren't, so that's why I'm encouraging people to call. But I had a question. If they had sent that letter in secret, it probably would have been more effective for what they wanted to do, but so did they really just do it to get attention? They were very proud of this letter?
I think
they have done it in secret?
Yeah, they could have done it in secret, and I think, although it probably would have come out anyway, but I believe that they were, I don't think that they still are proud of it, but I think that they thought that, you know, hey, look at this. We're gonna mess with the President of the United States. We're gonna flip him the bird, you know. We're gonna prove that we're not afraid of that guy. You know, he lies, you know. He's not even a legitimate American, you know, that all that kind of stuff. So I'm curious, Mary Jo, you called all 47 Republican senators. What kind of responses did you get?
Well, you know, I would say, you know, at least half of them, you know, I was just told to leave a message. But the other half, people did talk to me, you know, listen to what I had to say. I don't know I don't think I talked to any senator directly, but, you know, their spokesperson.
Sure.
They didn't, you know, I guess I was just spouting, so I didn't really get them a chance to say much. But I just said, you know, I felt an obligation to call each and every one of them because they're representing me as a citizen, and I thought they were doing dangerous, treasonous things. And I said it's sedition at the very least. And I want to ask you about this, though. Mm. Lawrence O'Donnell on his show last night said that you can't call it treason unless you're actively at war. And he said that's why Hillary didn't refer to it as treason. But I looked it up.
Yeah, the war is not.
And I couldn't find that anywhere.
Yeah, in the definition in the Constitution, it does not say during time of war.
Hmm.
It just says aid and comfort to the enemy. So.
Well, that's what they were doing then.
Yeah, I think so too. And I, you know, with respect for Lawrence, who's usually right, I think on this he's wrong. If you're reporting what he said correctly, Mary Jo, good on you for all those phone calls and thank you for sharing your experience with us. I appreciate the call, Stuart in Gardner, Kansas. Hey, Stuart, what's up?
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Stuart.
This whole Iran letter has got me thinking a lot about the caucus room conspiracy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That is just basically a kneecap to American foreign policy.
Yep.
But that got me thinking about the crash of 2016.
Yep.
And I have to admit, I haven't had time to sit down and actually read your book, The Crash of 2016. But I was wondering on that topic, based on this year's economic growth, which almost everybody agrees is quite good, were you thinking about changing your timetable on that?
No.
Or
I think
it's just going to be a short cycle.
I continue to believe that we're blowing up a balloon here. We're inflating a bubble. The core stuff that makes an economy work is still broken. We, you know, to have a vibrant economy, you have to have manufacturing, and we've lost, you know, we've passed below the 15% manufacturing as part of our GDP threshold, which means we are at serious, serious risk. And we're continuing to maintain a multi-hundred billion dollar a month trade deficit with China and the rest of the world. This is not a good situation. President Obama apparently thinks the TPP is going to save us. I think it's going to make the situation even worse. And the banks are still not well regulated. The international banking structures are there now for the rich and nobody else. Banksters are continually committing crimes and getting away with them. In fact, they can deduct from their taxes the fines that they're having to pay. I see it all as being held together with bailing wire and bubble gum, Stuart. It's a mess. Anyhow, thanks for the call. Go ahead.
Thank you. Where do you see the bubble, or have you just not spotted it yet?
Oh, the bubble is in inflated asset prices, the inflated equity prices. The stock market is as high as it is right now because there's, in part, because the economy is bad and bond yields are really low, And so if people have money and they want to put that money someplace where it will grow, that money is flowing into the stock market. And oddly, into the bond market at the same time. You've got bond funds going up, and you've got stock funds going up, which is a very, very rare thing. It's a sign of economic schizophrenia, really. And I just see this as a bad sign. I think that the market probably still has a ways to go up. Maybe, I don't know, another 1,000 or 2 points on the Dow. I could be wrong. We had a big correction yesterday. And the bond market, you know, we'll see. But I don't think that Janet Yellen's going to make the mistake that apparently the EU is making raising interest rates to try to combat inflation when there is no inflation. So we'll see where it goes, Stuart. I gotta move along. Thanks a lot for the call. Helen in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Helen, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon. Go marry Joe, man. I didn't do that.
Really? Really? 47 phone calls. That's damn impressive.
Yeah.
The phone number, by the way, for anybody who might want to try, you know, what Mary Jo did is 202-225-3121. And that's the phone number that gets you to the central switchboard for all of the House and Senate. And you can ask for any member of the House or Senate, and they will connect you. And if you don't know who represents you, give them your zip code, and they'll tell you who it is. Back to you, Helen.
Oh, yeah. I call there on a regular basis for my representatives, but I never called 47.
Yeah.
But anyhow, Tom, you probably know what the DSM is, Diagnostic Standard Manual.
Yes, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association of the USA.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the next edition, all right, now I'm being sarcastic, okay? The next edition, there should be one diagnosis called Republican, because, I mean, the Republicans aren't, there used to be good ones, like, hey, Abraham Lincoln, hey, Dwight Eisenhower, who told us to beware of the military-industrial.
Yeah. Everett Dirksen, for that matter. I mean, you know, who's very conservative, but he had a very high level of integrity.
But, Cheney's part of the military-industrial complex.
Yeah.
But at least he said that letter from the 47 guys was stupid, you know.
Well, actually, but, what Cheney was talking about was when Cheney made that comment, that was back in 1986 when Congress was investigating Ronald Reagan's unilateral interactions with Iran. And Cheney was saying the president has the right to cut a deal with Iran, even if it's a deal to, you know, hold the hostages to win an election. The president has that right. In fact, do we have Dick Cheney? Do we have time to play it? Yeah, here it is. Helen, listen to this. This is in 86.
Congress moving in and usurping presidential power and authority. And I think what we've seen over the last 15 years is the development of that theme of a more assertive Congress that no longer honors the traditions that are laid out in our report in terms of the practices of the president's preeminence in foreign policy. And as Henry Hyde said very well in his opening statement, it continues today. What Jim Wright did as Speaker last week to insert himself into direct negotiations with the communist regime in Managua, in my opinion, is fundamentally wrong. It's something that should never have happened. I don't think George Shultz should have let him off the hook yesterday.
What the Speaker of the House did was bring to the floor of the House for a vote the Boland Amendment, which said that President Reagan could not give money to right-wing death squads in Central America. Helen, thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to AM 1470 there in Ithaca. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before we leave.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Just think, you know, if there was no Republicans or they weren't as obstreperous, we could have the Full Employment Act. We could expand Social Security. And welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. Debbie watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Laughlin, Nevada. Hey, Debbie, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yesterday, at the end of your program, when you said, Ted, you're it, I thought, yeah, I guess I am. So I called both my Nevada senators. One's Harry Reid, and the other is a Republican, Joe Heller. Mm-hmm. And I called their offices in Las Vegas because I thought it might be easier to get messages to them at their local offices. Well, I called Joe Heller's office first, And I asked if he signed that letter, because I already knew he did.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said, you know, yes, he signed it. So I just said, well, tell that A good luck with his reelection campaign, because his treasonous A is going to be out of here.
Wow.
And then I called Harry Reid's office in Las Vegas, and I said, I want to know what Harry Reid's going to do about these 47 senators.
Right.
And, the guy that answered the phone in Las Vegas didn't really even seem to know what I was talking about.
Hmm.
And I said, these 47 senators, you know, that wrote the letter to the leader of Iran. And I could hear the guy was, like, tapping away. He was, like, trying to Google it or whatever.
Right. He's probably the local, constituent services guy. His job is probably, you know, if somebody calls with a Social Security problem, he hooks them up with the right agency.
Yeah. Well, then he found the message, so he reads me this statement about how Harry Reid just thinks that everybody needs to work in the spirit of bipartisan and work with the president. And I'm like, where has this guy been for 6 years?
Right.
There is no working with these people.
Right.
I said, I want Harry Reid out on the front steps at Capitol Hill calling out every one of these treasonous guys.
Yep. That is a great suggestion, Debbie. And Harry Reid, being the Senate Minority Leader, the most powerful Democrat in the Senate, basically the representative of all Democrats in the Senate, maybe we should be calling Harry Reid's office and suggesting that he float a resolution of censure, for example. You know, just something very simple,
yeah.
Just a simple resolution that says, you know, it is the sense of the United States Senate that these 47 Republicans have committed an un-American act, and we censure them for doing so. And
absolutely, and he needs to do it on the front steps at Capitol Hill, and if he won't do it, then he can hand the microphone to Bernie Sanders, because I know he will.
Yeah, there you go. Well said, Debbie, and thanks for making the calls, and thanks for calling and sharing the story with us. I appreciate it. Debbie in Laughlin, Nevada. Thank you, Debbie. We'll be back. It is 10 minutes before the end. Did you know, welcome back, 10 minutes before the hour, did you know that by a 7% majority or plurality, Americans want to ban for-profit prisons in the United States? And that's with no national conversation about the topic. A 7% majority of Americans want to ban private for-profit prisons. Think it'll happen with the Republicans controlling the House and Senate? It's unlikely. Richard in Melvindale, Michigan. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, great show. I listen to you all week long and all the other guys on the program.
Thank you.
And I just want to say you're doing a great job. I get home on the weekends to read costs, data costs.
Mm-hmm.
I was really interested. The reason I called was to find out where I could get a hold of that list.
This is from the Progressive Change Institute. And let me just real quickly, while we're on the air here, I'll Google them. And, whoops, or I'll DuckDuckGo them, actually.
Pardon me?
Change Institute. I'm searching for them right now with DuckDuckGo, my favorite search engine. And the website is boldprogressives.org. And
that's the one with all the percentages of what Americans really want.
Yeah, right. And it would be I'm looking on their homepage here. In the news campaigns about, let's see here. You know, I'm gonna have to track it down. We will find it. Let me just check our chat room here and see if Sue has tracked it down, because usually she puts these things into...
There's a lot of arguing with my relatives about
what
America really wants, and they just don't get it.
Oh, this is just... It's right here. It's very straightforward. It's very easy to read.
I know. You did it, you know, and it's there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And this is, so it's on this website someplace. And I'm sorry. I don't have right off the top of my head. I don't have it because I printed it out last week, you know.
Progressives. I'll find it once I get home on the weekend to get through my computer.
Okay. There you go.
Okay. And the other thing I wanted to say was about these guys. I agree with you. They are treasonous and they've been pulling this end run crap ever since Nixon.
Yeah.
During the Vietnam War, and they've done it three times.
Yep.
That I know of. Okay, and I'm 65, so it's like they won't stop, and they got an agenda. Right. They wanted to discredit Obama ever since he got into office.
Right.
And they don't give a crap about America, and this is all they want to do.
Yeah, trying to clean up the Republican Party is like trying to clean up the mafia. You know, there are these old habits that they always revert back to. Richard, thank you for the call, and good luck tracking down the list here. Like I said, if you don't subscribe to our newsletter, it's free. You get over at tomhartman.com. The information will be in there. Jennifer in Vienna, West Virginia. Hey, Jennifer, what's up?
Hi. A couple things. The longer I listen, the more I had them on mine. The poll that you were just talking about with the last caller, it's disturbing to me because I feel like I am in a very conservative area, so I tend to think more like the majority of the polled people,
mm-hmm.
but the people who live around me don't.
Right.
I live in West Virginia, as you said, and Shelley Moore Capito is one of my senators, and she's one of the 47 that signed this letter.
Hmm.
So I've called her office, and all I ever get is either an answering machine or I get a staffer who is overworked and underpaid and so tired of hearing
right.
people like me call every day. And so you get these, you know, standard, I'll pass the message along. And you know that 9 times out of 10, that message is either going to get shuffled into paper or maybe not even written down.
No, what they do, Jenna, I can tell you, this is how most senators and members of the House of Representatives run their offices, is they have basically a spreadsheet that their people have. Sometimes it's electronic, sometimes it's paper. And, you know, when people call in about a particular issue, it'll say something like, you know, letter to Iran, approve, disapprove. And, I mean, they're gonna boil your comments down to a binary option, and they're going to boil it down to typically one topic. And that's why I tell people, when you call a member of Congress, don't try to be fancy. Don't try to debate them. Don't try to do nuance. None of that's going to do any good. Have one topic that you're calling about and be very clear and explicit about how you feel about that one topic. I'm all in favor of the post offices being able to offer banking services to low-income people, or I'm opposed to the post office. You know, just very simple like that. Or, I think that these 47 Republican senators who followed Tehran Tom Cotton and signed this letter, I think that they are traitors. And, you know, it's very simple. It's unambiguous. But they do keep track of that information. And it does.
And I was told I needed to go to a bathroom. So that began my public, my lobbying efforts. Till then, I had just written a couple letters to, you know, to state level representatives. And since then, I've gotten, you know, to the point where I'll call and I'll try to talk to people. And I never, ever get responses. And hearing things like that study, that poll, the survey, I feel like that's the biggest problem facing the Democratic Party at this point, is that there is such a lack of hope. And I know that, you know, when President Obama was first elected, I feel like that was the thing that really, you know, was moving the nation, was this feeling that we might be able to do something. There might be, you know, maybe we can get somewhere.
Well, we've done a hell of a lot better than under George W. Bush.
Oh, sure. And, I mean, we're always going to do better than if, you know. But I feel like that's going to be the issue in 2016, is that so many Democrats or progressives have gotten into this apathetic point of view where it just seems like nothing we do matters.
Well, and that's what the Republicans want. And as Bernie points out, you know, the guys who are funding most of the ads that would make us feel apathetic, the Koch brothers, they don't feel apathetic at all. They're raising $1 billion for the next election. So, you know, if they're taking this seriously, we should be too. Jennifer, thank you for the call and for contacting your senators. And thank you all for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow with, you know, hopefully, so at least some of these senators will have enough courage and honesty to stand up and say, you know, this was a mistake. We really shouldn't have sent this letter. We're sorry. We respect the president. Anyhow, call him. Tag You're It. Congressional Switchboard, 202-225-3121.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.